Okay, so today our daf in Masechet Pesachim, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh on this happy third day of Chanukah morning, is daf Chov Beit. And let me just remind you where we are. So we had a machlokas yesterday about how we understand the meaning of a pasuk of Isurei Achila. And as I mentioned to you last night, we are about to go into the interrelationship of Isurei Achila and Isurei Hanah across Kol HaTorah Kula. We're going to end up examining what the makor would be for this idea of Yisra Hana'ah, where the Torah really doesn't talk about Yisra Hana'ah openly. And, of course, all of this was triggered by the interrelationship of the Kol Sha'ash, Mutar Lechol, Mutar La'achil, which shows that there's an interrelationship between Yisra Achila and Yisra Hana'ah, as we started with understanding the Shas Drabonan, and then moved on to, okay, where does the assumption come midyuraisa? So we had two very important approaches over here. One of them was the approach that actually we need a special limud, and that was Chizkiah's approach. The way that we know that something is Azar B'Hanah, it needs to be said to us in a particular way, such as what we find by Chometz B'Pesach. It says, V'lo ye'achel chametz. Instead of saying v'lo yochal, lo ye'achel means it shall not come to be used as a modality for eating, which means you can't even sell it and get money and buy something that is kosher Pesach with it. So that's a new idea. And of course, it implies that you're not able to get any type of hana out of it. But then we had a general halacha that is meant to apply to Kol HaTorah Kula, according to Rabbi Abbo. And Rabbi Abbo claimed that since we find one location where the Torah has to go out of its way to tell you that something is mutar b'hana'ah, even though it never said it was usur, it only said you're not allowed to eat it, the implication is that normally if it just says in a pasuk not to eat something, it means not to eat it in this same way of the lo yachel, meaning you can't come lidei any type of hanah from it, because ultimately that's translatable. So, you know, it would be the difference between saying you can't use electricity and you can't use energy. I mean, you know, you could transform any energy into any other kind of energy. And that's the question. Lo yachel means you can't transform it into a different form of achila. Every transformation involves the hana'ah. So according to Rabbi Abohu, we don't need a special grammatical clue that that's true. It's always true. That's the meaning of lo yochal, lo tochlu, and so on and so forth. The marker for this is the fact that the Torah needed to be matir when it came to an avela. The Torah needed to be matir hana'ah, because look, it says, okay, you could take that nevela, you can give it to a ger toshav who eats nevelas, you could sell it to a goy. Now, if the Torah needs to tell me that, I don't need the recommendation of HaKadosh Baruch about what to do with it. I mean, maybe I want to hang it up on a wall as a modern art. I mean, what's the difference what I do with it? So I understand that the meaning of the pasuk is that it's mutar b'hana'ah. So therefore, says Rebbe Abbo, you see, if the Torah basically tells you not to eat it, you're going to have to assume you can't be nene from it unless you're told otherwise. That's the chiddush. Now, that was very straightforward, but then we got into a complication. The complication was that it turns out that there's a machlokas Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda about how to understand the fact that that pasuk mentions separately giving something to a ger and then selling something to a goy, the same nevela, and it puts an O in the middle. And it's very strange, because at first it puts the object before the verb, in the case of the Nochri, and then it puts the object after the verb. In the case of the Ger, and then it puts it after the verb. It was very, very confusing. So we ended up having a machlokas because of that, how to read the pasuk. According to Rabbi Meir, both are mutter, both for the Ger and for the Nochri. So if that's the case, then we can just simplify, and we could say that the Torah was giving us a heter hana, which backs Rabbi Abbo. But according to Rabbi Yehuda said the Torah is giving it in this fashion specifically to tell us that you can only give it to the ger, and you can only sell it to the goy, but you can't give it to a goy, and you shouldn't sell it to the ger. Okay, if that's the case, then obviously there's a need for this pasuk other than to tell me that it's a mutter b'hana'ah. And I wouldn't be able to derive from the fact that the Torah tells me the dinim of what I'm allowed to do with it that have special dinim. I wouldn't be able to derive from that that anywhere else it would have been asur b'hana'ah, because it's not coming to tell me about hana'ah. It's coming to tell me what specifically I should do with it, right? So the last thing that we asked yesterday is, okay, if you're learning the pasuk going to Rabbi Yehuda, then we no longer have a mekar for the whole halacha of Rabbi Abbo. Where does Rabbi Abbo know the din from? And we said he learns it out from La Kelev Tashlichunoto. So since we also have that same halacha by Treifa, now this is what it sounds like, right? At the onset, we would have assumed that in any number of cases, if you bring me even one case, show me one case where the Torah has to be matir something b'hana'ah, and I will say, oops, that shows you that if it is a matir something b'hana'ah, that it's us, right? That's what you would think. However, the Gemara doesn't say that. The Gemara says that from Makelav Tashlichun Oto, we can derive the same din that we derive from the Vela. However, only because it says the word Oto. Oto atamashlich lakelav. It's this type of Isur that you're allowed to throw to the dogs, but you can't throw to the dogs any other Isur. Now, obviously, that's, I don't understand. I mean, if the point is that it's just the fact that the Torah needed to be matir hana'ah, that teaches me that otherwise hana'ah is asur, why do I need oto? All I need is an example. It's not because this is unique, correct? And yet the entire sugya, as we'll see, is based around the question of what is oto for. So there's a piece of missing information here. And that is that in the same way that we know that if there would be any need for the pasuk by Nevela, such as, according to Rabbi Yehuda, to tell me what I'm allowed to do with it particularly, that then I wouldn't be able to utilize it to teach me the din of Rabbi Abba. If there's any need for the pasuk of Treifa, I wouldn't be able to use it to tell me the din of Rabbi Abba either. And there is a need for the Treifa. And the need for the Treifa is, the famous drasha, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu never forgets, even if it's just something that is not even human, like a dog that does something right, then that has to be rewarded. And what did the dog do right? Well, the dog is deeply connected to Yitzias Mitzrayim, you'll recall, because the pasuk goes out of the way to say, L'chol b'nei Yisrael, lo yecharatz kelev l'shono. So there was a respect on the part of the dogs for Yitzias Mitzrayim. Because of that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to remember that obviously the memory is not of the dog, particularly for us. It's the fact that every single time we have a treifa, we recognize our involvement in the earth and in its brios as being part of the search for freedom in Yitzias Mitzrayim by giving the treifa to the dog. This is an amazing thing. And what's more, as the Medrash points out, this shows that a dog that does HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Ratzon is more chashev than a guy who worships Avodah Zarah. Because to the guy who worships Avodah Zarah, you throw a nevela. Nevela is like the lowest of the low. Treifa has some kind of, you know, ultimate sickness that ultimately will affect it, but it's not even noticeable. Very chashev animal, you know. It took a couple of vets to discover that there was a tiny hole in the intestine, whatever. I mean, that's not so low class. And we give that anyway to the dog. Okay, but that's a very good reason for saying L'Kelev Tashlichun. But why does it say Oto? That's the point. So meanwhile, the Torah is also telling me that this is a unique case. You could not just throw Isrei Hanah to your doggy. And why not? Where does it say it's Osir? Ah, that must be the point. Since it said don't eat it, that means don't be nena from it, and the case of the giving the treifa to the dog is a special case, and it's gufa coming to tell me not only that you should remember the doggy, but also to tell me that this is a unique case where you're allowed to be nena. But of course, that leaves open the question of what Rebbe Meir does with this oto, because remember, if it wouldn't have said oto, then as I said, you could have any number of cases where the Torah has to give you on a one-and-one basis the fact that you're allowed to be nena, so there would be no question at all. But you wouldn't need to say oto for that, would you? So oto is coming to teach me what? Ah, Rabbi Meir has an absolutely brilliant solution to this, which, if you don't know the underlying facts, sounds absolutely insane. Rabbi Meir's brilliant solution is that the Oto is coming to tell me that Chulin Shenishchatu Be'azorah is actually Usur B'Hana'ah. Now, isn't that obvious? What else would Oto be coming to tell me? So how does that follow? The truth is that follows beautifully, because the idea of Basar B'Soda, that is Trefa, that is a spatial concept. Because obviously, what's the difference if it's in a field or if it's in a lab? I mean, why do you say Basar B'Soda? You say Basar Trefa, right? So from there we learn that the underlying concept of Trefas is the fact that something is no longer in its space, whatever that space is. The space of an organism is its viable biological space in which it's capable of survival. The space, and therefore once that space has been removed, it's no longer usable. How about the space of an embryo? Well, the space of an embryo is a uterus. Okay, so what happens if a cow's embryo sticks its hand out, like happened in this week's parsha with a human, and then takes that hand back in, and then you shech the mother? That hand is trefa, because it left the uterus, and this organism still requires a uterus. What do you think of that? It's the same dinner trefas, astounding, right? Because it's a concept. Another one of these incredibly sophisticated Torah concepts is mind-boggling. So part of the same concept is the idea that there is an iser of shechting chulin in the Azorah, because this is not its space. And if you shech the chulin in the Azorah, then it's trefa. That's the iser that's involved. Now, you would have thought that since the literal trefa, where a wolf got it, the meat, the Torah went out of its way to say throw it to a doggy, you would have thought that the same thing is true of the other trefa that is merumas here, namely chulin shenishchatu be'azorah, that you would have a right to throw it to a doggy. That's why it has to say, lakelav tashlichun oto, the literal trefa, but you cannot throw a spatial violation in general to a doggy. In which case, Rabbi Meir's interpretation is absolutely brilliant, because it's all self-contained, it's immediately recognized as being necessary, because the first thing that strikes you, oh, so then spatial violations are not problems of Yisurei Hana? Absolutely not. Only one particular type of spatial violation. All right, so then Rabbi Meir makes a lot out of this pasuk. The problem is, it makes so much out of the pasuk, and it's so immediately part of the local meaning of the pasuk, that the question is, what is the Rabbi Abbo's going to approach to this going to be? I mean, how does he know this? V'idach, he says, listen, the whole concept, this is how Tosfos learns, the whole concept of chulin shenishchatu be'azorah as being a spatial violation is really not the arisa. It's an extension of the way the Rabbanan understood the posik, perichuk mokom ata ochel, v'yata ochel bekirov mokom. That concept itself of something having a space where it's not really necessary for it, it could have a lesser space, this is a greater space, that's not the arisa. Rashi learns that the iser of chulin shenishchatu be'azorah as being an iser hana'a is only a derabbanan, and therefore it doesn't require a pasuk. Obviously, it was a gezeira derabbanan to treat it with the chumras that we treat the other issues in the Beis Hamikdash, where you have hegdash that was posel. There it's aser banas, derabbanan would go there. Chulin shenishchatu be'azorah is aser banas. Okay, masiv Rav Yitzchak Nafka. So now we begin our journey into the other isurim in the Torah. And we take those other Isurim, and we actually are going to go through them one by one. What is Usur? What is Mutter? And what in the world is the interrelationship between the different halachas? So let's take first, says the Gemara. Let's take first, Gid HaNasha. Vare Gid HaNasha. So what did the Torah say about the Gid HaNasha? Rachman Amar Alkein Lo Yochlu Bnei Yisrael Et Gid HaNasha Vitnan Sholeach Adam Yerech Lenochri V'Gid HaNasha B'Tocho Mipnei Shemekomo Nikar. Can you send a gift to a goy of a piece of meat that contains a gid hanasheh in it? Says the Mishnah, yes, you can. But the reason that you can is because of the fact that even if another Jew saw you giving that gift to the goy, he will not think, aha, it must be that this is a kosher piece of meat because the kosher piece of meat came from a Jew. So he must have taken out the gid hanasheh. He's not going to make the mistake of thinking that because he can look at it and he can see, oh, look at this. It's the piece of meat is clean. When you take out a gid hanasheh, you make a mess out of the piece of meat by ripping out the gid hanasheh throughout. And that's very evident. But, I mean, that means that that's the only reason. Then that would be the only problem, right? So if that's the only problem, aren't you getting hana'ah by giving the gid hanasheh to the goy? So I thought it says not to eat it, doesn't it? How do you explain that? Says Rabbi Amohu, according to whom the problem is, he's the one that says it, says lo yochlu means that you're not allowed to have hana'ah from it. That's because when the Torah said that you can take an actual nevela and you give it to a goy, or you give it to a ger, or you sell it to a goy, didn't that nevela have a gid hanasheh in it? So when the Torah said you could take the nevela, it meant including the gid hanasheh. So then that means already that the Torah tells me, beferish, there is no problem of my being nenet from a gid hanasheh. There you go. Well, not necessarily, because the question is a gid hanasheh a nevela? Because that would depend on whether a gid is considered to be an edible part of the animal. The technical term for that is yesh begidin benotein tam. If a gid is considered to be the equivalent of a piece of meat, so then if it would fall into something else, it would make it usser because of the taste of isser. But if the gid is not a piece of meat, ein begidin benotein tam, wouldn't make any difference. You just fish it out and throw it out. Meanwhile, the rest of the chalent remains kosher, right? So then this idea that Rabbi Abo, you're claiming, would have held that once the Torah was mater and avela, it must have included a heter on the gid, is not necessarily the case. It would only be true if the nevela includes a particular piece of meat called the gid hanasheh. But suppose there is no such piece of meat. So ani chalamandi omer yesh beginim benotin tam. If the gid is not part of the meat of the animal, then it doesn't prove a darn thing, does it? So then how do you understand the fact, according to Rabbi Abo, that you're allowed to send a gift to a goy? Well, yeah, it actually works out perfectly. Who is the name of the mandi? Who's the mandi omer that says ein beginim benotin tam? That is Rabbi Shimon. Because the brisa says, ochel mi gid hanasheh. Shall behema to me, somebody is going to eat a gid hanasheh from a non-kosher animal. What is the halacha over there? So Rabbi Yehuda says you're chayev on two separate isurim. One is because you ate a non-kosher animal, and the other is because you ate the gid hanasheh of the non-kosher animal, and that were chal simultaneously, so there was no problem of ein isur chal al isur, and therefore you'd be chayev on two different things. But Rabbi Shimon says, no, you are not chayev at all, actually. You're not chayev on eating the non-kosher animal because a gid is not a piece of meat. And you're not chayev on the gid hanasheh either because the Torah said, akein lo yochlu get gid hanasheh, much for the rest of the animal you could have eaten. But in this case, you can't eat the whole thing. So in that case, the Torah never asked the gid hanasheh. So in any event, it's clear that according to Rabbi Shimon, there is no din of nesinas tam. And therefore, according to Rabbi Shimon, the halacha ought to be that there is no heter hana'ah. And in fact, that happens to be the halacha, so it works out perfectly. Rabbi Shimon Ochinami indeed holds that it's asur b'ana. D'tanya, gid hanasheh mutar b'ana'ah divi Rabbi Yehuda, v'Rabbi Shimon oser. So that actually not only is an answer for Rabbi Avo, it fits so perfectly, it's almost like it was tailor-made for Rabbi Avo. Okay, let's take another case. So far we've spoken about chometz, and we've spoken about the nevela, and we've spoken about the trefa, and we've spoken about the gid hanasheh. How about if we move on to dam, the yisur of dam? Now, the Torah says, kol nefesh b'chem lo tochal dam. Lo tochal dam means, according to Rabbi Abo, you cannot have hana'ah from dam. Then how do you explain the Mishnah that says that Elu ve'elu mitarvim ba'ama v'yotzim le'nachal Kidron v'nimkorim le'gananim le'zevel. It says beferish that whether you have the leftover blood from the chataot that were poured out, the ones that were brought inside, the special chataos of the Moadim, they are poured out on the western side of the Yesod, and the other dam of the chatas is poured out on the southern side, which is right up against each other, but one is on the south part of the corner, one is on the west part of the corner. Both of those bloods run along into that pipeline. It's an open one amma. It's an open amma that takes all of the filth in the Azara and all of the blood that spilled out. Every once in a while, they pop it up and they put water across. They allow the water to go over the entire floor and then open up the drain and clean it out. It's very, keeps things very clean. That blood goes out through that amma into Nachal Kidron. And over there, it is sold as fertilizer. So the mixture is very rich in nutrients because of the blood and other things that fall into it. And it's sold. But what do you mean? How are you allowed to be nene from it? It says you're not allowed to eat blood. So then you should not be allowed to have hana'ah for blood for putting it in your garden as fertilizer either. I mean, obviously you have to pay hegdash for it, but that's not an Israel. No, that's me'ilah. That's a different halacha. Fine. So you pay hegdash for it. The truth is that it isn't really midiraisa going to be me'ilah, because me'ilah is only on things that were not completed. Their mitzvah was not completed over here. After the Shvichas HaShiraim to the Yesod, there's no longer any mitzvah that needs to be done with that dam, right? Okay, so basically, it's a derabbanan. But in any event, it's certainly mutar b'ana'ah. So how do you explain that, Rabbi Abu? It says not to eat it. No, it's different. Dam is different, says Rabbi Abu, because dam is compared to water, remember? Lo tochlenu ala aretz tishpachenu kamayim, pour it out on the ground as if it were water. Now, once upon a time, water was mutter, you didn't have to pay for it and everything, you know, just in order to be able to drink. But now, this water means that just like water is mutter b'ana, so too is dam mutter b'ana, right? So there you go. Well, I mean, maybe it means water of the type of water that's poured out of the Mizbeach and belongs to Hegdash. So if you have Nisach HaMayim, that would be Hegdash's water, and that would be us, or no? Maybe that's what it means. Amar Rebbe Abo, when it says Kamayim, it means like water in general, not water that is poured out of the Mizbeach once a year. So maybe that would be the pshat, that it would mean that mayim, rov mayim? No. Does it say rov mayim? I mean, maybe it just means arach shprechenu kemayim in the context of the mizbeach, right? That's not a good answer. Says Rav Ashi, no, because it says tishpechenu. Tishpechenu means pour. When you do nisach hamayim, pour it out, throw it out on the ground. Nishpach means like to just pour it out. And that's not the same as nisuch, so it's kamayim anishpachim, not like mayim anisachim. Well, I mean, there are water that's poured out that's usher also, isn't there? I mean, suppose somebody pours out water in front of an avodah zara. I mean, that's also called pouring. You're not gonna dignify it by using the word nisuch, are you? I am. Actually, that's called nisuch. Because it says in the Torah Beferes, Yishtu Yein Nisicha. So there you go. So you see that even in terms of Avodah Zarah, we do consider things poured out in front of Avodah Zarah. And therefore, there is no water that is Nishpach that would be Aser Bana, which is therefore a good answer for Rabbi Abba. All right, now, remember that all of this started with the Machlokas of Chizkiya with Rabbi Abba, right? According to Chizkiya, the point is that it says lo ye'achel. But if it wouldn't have said lo ye'achel, it would have just said lo tochlu chametz, then I would not have known an Isra Hana'ah. So now Chizkiya has to explain to us why the Torah has to be matir things, which according to him were never usher. But why is the Torah telling me blood is mutter? Why would blood be usher? So lama yochata itkish dam lamayim, what would the need be? Ah, we know that. How do we know that blood of Hegdesh is not machshir? Only blood that is nishpach kamayim can be the same as mayim, as hamashke. And she'eno nishpach kamayim, namely, the blood of Hegdesh is not machshir, because that cannot be poured out. It needs to be collected in a cup before you put it on the mizbeach. Okay, so now we've done dam as well, together with the other isurim that are somewhat related, Balei Chayim isurim. So we've talked about, after our chametz, we've talked about the nevela and the treifa and the dam. Now let's move on to Eiver Min HaChai. So it's all part of the same family, Eiver Min HaChai. So by Eiver Min HaChai, it says, Lo tochal hanefesh im habasar. And Rabbi Natan said in a brayta, Minayin shelo yoshit adam kos shel yayin, kos yayin linazir, or Eiver Min HaChai livnei Noach. So how do I know that I can't even hand over a cup of wine to a nazir, and I can't give a piece of Eiver Min HaChai to a goy? Tamud lomar lifnei iver lo titein michshol. The only problem is that since the goyim, remember, part of the mitzvah, sheva mitzvahs b'nei Noach, was that Noach was told, ach basar b'nafsho damo lo tochel. And for there we understood that as long as the nefesh is ima basar, that there is no way for you to actually use it. And does that mean hanoah, or does that mean achila? It says lo tochel. And it says over here that the only reason I can't give it to a goy is because of lifnei iver. Okay, I understand, but to throw it to a dog, there's no lifnei iver, is it? So that means I would be able to use Eiver Min HaChai as dog food. But how do you explain that if it says that you're not allowed to eat it? It says lo tochlu. And according to Rabbi Abu, lo tochlu means do not use it for dog food either. Answers Rabbi Abu, Eiver Min HaChai is also different, because Eiver Min HaChai is compared to dam. Because it says, Rak chazak levilti echol hadam, ki adam hu hanefesh. So there's the point that the nefesh, which is boser binafsho, is the same as the iser of dam, and namely, it's not oser bahana'a, because of alarz tishbachan kamay. Okay, so that's unique. So wait a minute. So according to Chizkia, who holds that, well, it didn't say lo te achel, it didn't say lo ye achel, it said lo tochlu. So why do I need to compare it? What is the point of saying the comparison of nefesh to dam? So for what purpose, l'may hilchot, according to Chizkia, do I have Eiver Min HaChai compared to dam? Says Chizkia, no, you got it backwards, man. It's actually dam that's compared to Eiver Min HaChai. That's the point. And that is to tell me a very special halacha. It's damadis kishle Eiver Min HaChai. To tell me that Eiver Min HaChai is aser, you should know that there is dam min HaChai that is also aser in that iser of Eiver Min HaChai. And that is to tell me that that iser of dam applies also to dam min HaChai, even the more chomer iser of Koris, of Achilas Dam. What kind of Dam would that mean? Because we spoke before about like Dam Atamtsi, that Dam that just comes out after the meat would be sitting around for a while and so on. And in fact, this comes to tell me specifically which type of Dam Min HaChai are we talking about? Dam HaKaza Shanefesh Yotz Abo. Now elsewhere, the Gemara explains that there's really four different types of blood. When you open up a vein, you will get four different stages, which are different levels of blood pressure and different colors in the dam. And there is one type of dam hakaza that is called the dam shanefesh yotsebo. That is considered to be the dam that you're chayev on karet. It's the iser, which is compared to dam hanefesh. And that's the reason that it mentions dam in the din of the nefesh of Eiver Min HaChai. Okay, I got another question for you then. How about shor niska? Okay, the shor goes ahead and kills somebody. So you're supposed to take the shor and you stone the shor. It says, Sako yisakel ashor. There it says, Velo ye achel et bisoro, uba al hashor naki. Now, it says over there that you're not allowed to eat that shor. And the Braita points out, well, obviously, I mean, how would I be allowed to eat a shor that I stoned? I didn't shecht it. So, mimashba shenemar tzakoyi zakel ashor eni yodeh shu nevela? Don't I know that I can't eat a nevela already? Why then does the Torah have to say lo yachel? Magid lecha katuv, she'im shachato la'acha shenigmar dino, asur. Suppose the Beis Din Paskin, okay, take the shor out and go bring it to the Beis Haskila. At that moment, it already becomes asur. And if I grab it, and before Beis Din has a chance to save the shor, I shecht it, and I say, whew, at least we can eat the meat now, it's still coming to tell me that it's already asur. Continues the bright, does it say, Ein li ela ba'achila ba'ana'a minayin? How do I know that it's not only asur ba'achila, it's also asur ba'ana'a? Talmud lomar, ba'al ha'shor naki. The owner of the shor is free and clear. What does that mean, free and clear? How does that mean that it's considered to be asur ba'ana'a? My mashma. Shimon ben Zoma Omer, look, it's like a guy. You tell your friend, oh man, this guy was cleaned out. He's cleaned out. I mean, he has about a penny left. So he was cleaned out from everything he owns. That's an expression that the Torah is using to say over here, the owner of the shor is cleaned out. And it's therefore not going to be mutter for him to get anything out of it. And the question is, why in the world do we need this? Time it because of a bala shor naki. It's only because of using that language of cleaned out. But apparently, lo ye achel, and that, lo ye, God help us. I mean, that was true even according to Chizkia. Doesn't say lo ye achel, it says lo ye achel at Pesaro. And nonetheless, we are not viewing the lo ye achel as sufficient basis for asering the Hana'ah. How do you explain that? So there must be something special. Answers the Gemara that the point would be that if lo ye achel, see the question inside. Yisra achila mashma, yisra na lo mashma. Answers the Gemara, the truth is, lo yeachel is certainly mashma, according to everybody. Both Chizkia and Rabbi Abo, yisra achila, yisra hana'ah. But the fact is that over here, there's something unique. And that is, lo yeachel et bisaro. Do not eat its meat. Ah, okay. So what if I would want to be nene from the skin? Can I use the skin to make a wallet, to make a pair of shoes, or not? So I certainly would have thought that lo yachel et bisaro limits the implications of the Yisra Achila and the associated Yisra Hana to the meat. And it never told me I cannot use the skin. That's why I need Bala Shor Naki to tell me, you is cleaned out. Not one penny do you get out of it, even to make a wallet. Let's just see that inside, that the truth is, Saka Daita Chamina, I might have thought that Hana'at Oro is different, because since it says lo yechel et bisaro k'tiv, that means only the basaro is the problem, but Oro lo is not a problem. Kamash malan, even from the skin, you are cleared out. Now, that is not so clear, you know, because there are Tanoim that utilize, this is a whole big machlokas in Baba Kama, the idea of Bala Shor Naki, they say, means exactly what it says. Bala Shor Naki means that the owner is not responsible. That's the point. Isn't that simple meaning? Because, look, if this, we're talking over here about a shor tam, if this shor would have been a shor mu'ad, it would, the Torah says, he should be killed along with the shor. And then im kofer, yushata lav, well, you don't really have to kill him because he can pay his way out. Right? So whatever that kofar is, whether it's his value or the value of the victim. But the point is that if a tam pays chatzi nezek, then I might have thought that a tam, in the case of a murder case on the shore, if the muad pays kofar shalim, so then the tam would pay chatzi kofar, which would be the equivalent in the case of a tam as the kofar shalim in the case of the muad. So the Torah certainly has to come along and tell me, No, this is not considered to be your responsibility, since it was a tam, at all. But then it has nothing to do with telling you that there is an Isra Hana. It's only coming to tell me, literally, what it means. So now what are you going to do then? There's another Mandi Omer who says Bala Shor Naki means that if the victim over here is a pregnant woman, that there's no din of paying for the vlodais, which there is in other cases of Nizkei Shor. So what do we do about that? According to this, we don't have a pasuk to tell me. So lahanech tadoin amavke lelaikra ledrosh achnina. Either lachatzi kofra or to the ptur of dmei v'lodais, which the Adam would have to pay, but does not pay in the case of Ishar. So then how would he know that the R is Aser? He learns that from the word lo yachel et bisaro. Remember that the word et, which has no English equivalent and shows a particular relationship of a non-extant preposition in English, which focuses on the direct connection to the object. In English, we don't have a word that serves that purpose, and it's a very powerful word because it implies an extension of connection to the object. And therefore, we always use it, indeed, as an extension. That is Rabbi Kaplan just calling in to remind us your opportunities are running out. The window is closing. It's matching funds Hanukkah time. All right, I got the message, Rabbi Kaplan. Be quiet. So don't forget, take advantage of the closing window. Anyway, continuing. So now, according to this, since it says et bisaro, it would extend the din of the bosser to that which extends outward from, God help us, which extends outward from that, and that would be the skin. So, et hatafel lebisaro. Ah, so then why do we need balashar naki? Why couldn't he use that also for it? Because he doesn't darshan et. That's why. So, et lo darish. Where do we see that there's a machlokas about darshaning et? Kidatanya, Shimon, a famous story, amazing story. Shimon Amsuni, some say it was Nechemi Amsuni, used to be Doresh all of the Esim in the Torah. Wow, what a job. What does every single S in the Torah come to include, come to broaden the envelope? But when he got to the word, Et Hashem Elokecha Tira, he said, oh my God, I obviously been making a mistake. How can there be anything that could be viewed as an extension of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give Yira to something else? That would be Avodah Zarah. So he said, forget it, I made a mistake. Obviously, et does not have the meaning that I attributed to it. It doesn't allow you to expand the envelope. Omru Talmidav, Rebbe, we've been spending decades on this. What the heck are we, what are we going to do now? All of those notes, all of those books, all of those recordings, the website, the S website, we're going to throw the whole thing out? Says the Rebbe to them, listen, gentlemen. There's no such thing as an investment that is useless. All of the schar that you got for all of that work on every S, you're going to get the same schar for throwing it out. Because believe me, you put in just as much hell in throwing it out as you did in discovering it. And because of that, it's the same schar for the discovery as it was for the throwing it out. So consider yourselves lucky. You just got a couple of decades worth of schar. Fantastic. So anyway, it's only the continued pursuit of truth that counts. But you're now you're invested? And now if S, the website has to come down, so now it was all for nothing? What's wrong with you? So anyway, beautiful story, right? But he gave up on darshaning S. So according to that, we wouldn't be able to darshan et bisaro. Until Rabbi Akiva came along and saved the day for some. And Rabbi Akiva said, no, you can and must be Doresh. Et Hashem Elokecha Tira. That comes to be Marbe, the din of Talmidei Chachomim, which Rashi says is the halacha of Mora Rabcha Kemora Shamayim, so that we have indeed an expansion, Kivayachol, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence through the Torah in a person. Amazing. Okay, let's move on to other Isurei Achila. How about Orla? Okay, the Torah says that arelim lo yochal. So we have in the pasuk, we have a repetition of the word arelim. The tatem kol eitz ma'achal. Listen to the number of times that we use that word orla. Va'araltem orlato et piryo. Shalosh shalem yulachem arelim lo yachal. So we got these three separate mentions of the status of arelut. And it says indeed in the Braita. Tanya. Arelim, so it stresses, arelim lo yeachel is the Lashon, which is good, even according to Chizkiah, and it mentions it three times in terms of the Lashon of Arelus. So the Braita wants to explore what that's all for. So if it only would have said Arelim lo ye'achel, ein li ela isra'chila, how do we know not to be nene, not to use it for colorations as dye stuffs, or to use it for burning as an oil, tamad lomar va'araltem, orloto, arelim lo ye'achel. And that's marba everything. Now, wait a second over here. Even according to Chizkiah, it says lo ye'achel. So why do we need these extra pasuk of arlato and araltem and all of that? You see that the only reason we're expanding it into an isra'na is because time to gazrachman of araltem arlato arelim. And if not for that, I would have said lo ye'achel is an isra'chila and not an isra'hana'a. And that sort of throws the whole enterprise over here, both of Chizkiah and of Rebbe Avo, out of the window. No. Shane'atam dechtiv lachem. The point over there is, it stresses shalosh anim yet lachem arelim. Every time the Torah says lachem, it always means lachem lechol tzorchechem. It's dafka a heter of hana'a. So therefore, I would have thought that since it says lachem, which means this is meant to be yours. And remember, we just spoke about Yisrei Hana in terms of chite de kur denaisa, that even if you would be Makadish and Isha, nothing would happen because of the fact that it isn't yours. Okay, so Yisrei Hana'a are not yours by definition. And therefore, if the Torah is saying lachem, it's saying it's not Asur Bahana. Therefore, I need the pasuk because I would have thought, oh, v'ksiv lachem, which means that it is yours, comes along the pasuk to tell me, varaltem, arlato, so on and so forth, that you cannot use it and doesn't mean shalachem. Okay, well then why does it say lachem? That's ridiculous. So then don't say the lachem. So what's the lachem coming to tell me? What is lachem for? That we shall see tomorrow to keep you on the edge of your seats.